Carol Cox Show on K108.
And we'll be friends. But right now is where it ends. I hold no grudge, and I'll forgive you your mistake. But forgive me if I take it all to heart and make sure that it doesn't start again. Yes, I'm the kind of people you can step on for a little while, but when I call it quits, people you can hurt once in a while, but crawling just ain't my style. I hold no grudge, and deep inside me there's no regrets, but a girl who's been forgotten may forgive.
Yes, K108. Yes, and that was a great song. And, it's time for the Carol Cox Show here on AM 1080, KWAI, 524-1080. We have some guests lined up this morning, and Carol will introduce them. They're on the line holding on right now. So let's go to Carol.
Hi. Hey, thank you, Francis, and aloha, everybody. Good to be back here in Honolulu, and it's beautiful. We got some mountains draped in clouds today, a little rain, and really nice. So a break from the hot weather we've had here in the last couple of days. I want to thank Dr. Previdoris and Mr. Cliff Slater for standing in for me last week. Their discussion was on traffic, and we got thousands of downloads from that show. And you can always pick it up again if you'd like to hear it or share it with others at carolcox.com. Or you can call here in the show at 524-1080. Now, I have a couple of guests calling in from Florida and Maryland, and they are former employees or contractors. It's not clear. They are contractors or employees, and I'll let them clarify exactly, with the Humane Society of the United States. And one is Mr. Ronnie Graves. The other is Mr. Alan Schwartz. And his spouse, and they were a part of the emergency response team. And if I get it a little inaccurate, we'll have the entire hour to speak about it. And the reason I wanted to talk and reach out to these people is that, as you recall, we had the Humane Society of the United States to go into the Norman Payne property, assisting the Oahu SPCA to assist in housing some animals that Mr. Payne had with his wife, who had recently passed. And the city prosecutor, as you may know, has decided that they will not be prosecuting Mr. Payne for many reasons, one being evidentiary. The lack thereof or what have you, it wasn't really clear because we didn't hear specifically from the prosecutor's office. We heard from Ms. Pam Burns, executive CEO of the Hawaiian Humane Society, who, interestingly enough, released the press release or her comments on a Friday, and it hit the news late in the afternoon. Having said all of that, there were some issues. You may have heard on the show earlier, we talked about 2-3 weeks ago, where they were wearing badges, they being Mr. Scotland Hazley and his assistant, Mr. Rowdy Shaw. And that caught my attention because I don't remember or seeing anything that said that these people are actual bona fide, legitimate law enforcement people. So in pursuing that, I've found that they are not. And you'll hear some of the interesting things, and I got a statement from Mr. Ronnie Graves, and I'm going to bring him on and the others on real quick here. But I want to share with you and set the tone of this conversation. Hopefully, you understand where we're going with this. It's an email to Mr. Wayne Pacelli of the Hawaiian Humane of the Humane Society of the United States. He's the executive CEO, president. I don't know what his actual title is. But he's sending this email and a statement to Mr. Pacelli, what he had written. He basically, he has provided me a statement in synopsis. But what he said that he shared with, I called Scotland and relayed my concerns. This is to Wayne Pacelli. His statements to me on the phone was, quote, "I want the scum to think we are law enforcement. I informed him I would never wear that badge. I work with a large number of law enforcement people and have the utmost respect for them." Now, that's one thing reportedly Saint Mrs. Hazley reportedly told Ronnie. Further, when Ronnie shared this more in person with Mr. Purcell, Mr. Purcell's comments were, his comments back to me were a famous smile. Quote, "I like the cowboy ways that Scotland brings to the team," end quote. I told him those cowboy ways were going to net him a huge lawsuit one day. Well, I don't know if Mr. Graves is a fortune teller or has a crystal ball, but there is a federal law lawsuit that Mr. Payne has brought against several entities, and you can see that lawsuit on carolcox.com. But anyway, having said all that, I've kind of chopped it up. But Ronnie, are you there? Good morning.
Good morning to you, Carol. Yes, I am.
And Alan, are you there?
I am here, yes.
Okay.
Good morning.
And then is Meredith joining in?
She's not, no.
Okay. Well, anyway, good morning to the two of you, and I appreciate that you're willing to come and share with us here in Honolulu as to what went on. And if you guys could, both of you, briefly tell what your experience is and what is your official involvement or your formal involvement with the Humane Society of the United States.
Go ahead, Ronnie.
Well, my name is Ronnie Graves. I was a, first of all, a volunteer with Humane Society of the United States. And then my rescue team, Sumter Disaster Animal Response Team, became a contractor to the disaster services team for Humane Society of the United States. And I had a 2.5-year agreement to provide services for them for primarily vehicles, taking care and building of the transport vehicles, and providing logistical support in times of disasters.
Mm-hmm. And where were some of the places that you... We've had a number of disasters here recently, in the recent years. What were some of those that you participated in personally?
Personally, I started in 1998 with the fires in Florida. Most of the state of Florida was on fire, and we had to move animals out quickly. And then in 2004, the state of Florida was hit with 4 hurricanes, and I physically worked 3 out of the 4 hurricanes. And then I came back, and from working those, and I knew that we needed additional equipment. I had also owned a drag racing team prior to this, and I sold my cars and took that money and invested it in equipment to help rescue animals.
Mm-hmm.
Hurricane Katrina hit, and then I was asked to provide that equipment, and we spent almost a month in southern Mississippi after Hurricane Katrina.
I
participated in tornadoes in Tennessee, puppy mill. Violators are in Tennessee was a big one, 753 animals. Done hurricane pre-evacuation in Hurricane Gustav, and then afterwards transported animals out of the area, and then Hurricane Ike transported animals and provided some equipment for the deployment.
I see. And you have worked directly with or under Mr. Scotland Haisley?
Yes, sir, I have.
And then how long did you work with him or interact with him on these missions? Or how many missions was he involved in with you?
I interacted with him for 13 months. And I would probably say over that time it was anywhere from probably 8 to 10 deployments total.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And,
well, let me let Alan hop in here, and then we'll get back running for you can share some of the concerns and that you and I have discussed off air and that you share with me in the emails. And I can't tell you how much I appreciate the two of you and the others that have come forward to share and bring light to the subject. So, Alan, how are you?
Good, how are you? Aloha.
Good, aloha. And how's your background and what's your relationship with the, your formal relationship with the Humane Society of the United States?
I had volunteered with them for a number of years and went down to Katrina when they called. I'd done a few hurricanes and floods prior to that. But Katrina, again, you know, everybody says was the defining moment. I volunteered with the Humane Society during Hurricane Katrina for approximately 12 weeks or so. And shortly after Katrina got done, they decided to, they never had a formal, if you will, large disaster response team. And I think with, they felt with some of the money that they raised from Katrina that they wanted to start a formal, full-time, dedicated disaster response team, emergency services team. And I believe I was the second person that was actually hired onto that team. They formally hired me as a full-time employee in January of 2006, I believe it was, January 1st, 2006. And I had worked with them for a while under a different director who subsequently was separated from them. And after that, I became a consultant, what they call a full-time consultant with them.
I see.
When I was there, Scott was hired. I was there as a consultant. And it's been from there. I had done a number of puppy mills, some dogfighting cases, a large number of disasters, transports, probably somewhere in the neighborhood of 20, 25 responses.
Mm-hmm. I see. And prior to Scotland Haisley arriving or getting involved with that organization at this level, were they using badges or wearing badges at these different scenes and different puppy mill sites and what have you, the emergency response sites?
No, they never had badges. They had they basically had a quasi uniform, VDUs and T-shirts, HSUS marked T-shirts.
Mm-hmm.
The idea was to give a semblance of a well trained team, I guess.
Right. If the two of you could share with the listeners out there, how does the let's say we're here in Hawaii. And we know that it's explained that they were invited by the Oahu SPCA, the Humane Society of the United States was invited by them. But these other places that you engaged or worked with HSUS, how did they get involved in Texas, for example? Were they asked to come, or did they just volunteer themselves and insert themselves? Can you share with us how they get involved, that organization get involved?
Well, formally, the way it's supposed to work is, like, in a disaster, the protocols are you never self-deploy. Even as volunteers, you never self-deploy. That's what the protocols are supposed to be.
Mm-hmm.
You are invited in by an agency that's in charge. So HSUS has people that will make phone calls and offer up the assistance and let them know. Much the same as volunteers, when a disaster or something comes about, let's say I was a volunteer, I can call, if I hear about, say there's a hurricane that's come, the one that's out in the Pacific now is going into Cabo, I could call and say to them, if you are activated, I am available. It's the same sort of thing. They can call and say, you need assistance, we're available, and they're supposed to wait until they're called to deploy.
Mm-hmm.
So they deploy at the request of a local agency, work under that local agency.
Mm-hmm.
The protocol.
I see. And let me ask you, what we've seen and what I've shared and what you've seen in the news regarding the Humane Society of the U.S.'s activities out here at Mr. Payne, should the public be concerned nationwide, or am I just sounding the alarms and ringing the bells for reasons that really not warranted? Can you tell us, in your own experience and as you've expressed with me in the emails, should the public be concerned with the practice that we observe here with the HSUS?
I would say very much that the public needs to be concerned. There are violators of animal laws, you know, who should be aware that they are breaking the law, but the responding team that's going to go in and handle it, there's certain protocol that you have to follow, and mm-hmm. the first and foremost thing is that we are not cops.
Mm-hmm.
We're not district attorneys. We're not detectives. We're not supposed to put ourselves off as such.
Mm-hmm.
And when you do that, you're taking on a tremendous responsibility. In any deployment that I have gone on like that, we were not even there when the initial search warrant was issued.
I see.
You let the officers with the SWAT team go in and get the situation under control, and a search warrant is issued, and then when the site is under control, they would bring the rescuers in, and we would do our job.
Right. Now, I noticed there's quite a few videos of every site that, I shouldn't say every site, that would be a misstatement, but many of the sites and projects that we've worked on, there seems to be a video on the HSUS website, and then right next to it is a donate button. Should we be concerned that maybe the tail is wagging the dog in this case? It's about money. And Ronnie, if you could explain, lay it out for us, where you had sent, spoke with Scotland regarding his comments that I read earlier, that he wants the scum to think we're law enforcement, and also Mr. Pacelli's response to you. Could you elaborate on that and share with us a little more detail?
Sure. The badge and an identification card arrived at my facility in Florida, my business, and a jacket that's got logos all over it for Humane Society of the United States. And in the pocket was the badge. And
mm-hmm.
I took it out, I looked at it, and I immediately was suspect that this looked too much like a law officer's badge.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of my friends here in Sumter County, Florida, are law officers, and I deal a lot with them on a regular basis. And one, a detective, happened to be sitting right there, and he looked at it and he said, "Ronnie, do not ever wear that. He said, that is going to make you appear as if you're acting like a law enforcement officer.
Mm-hmm.
So I had that and other reasons to call and talk to Mr. Haisley, and picked up the phone, and I called him and got him on the telephone, and I told him my concerns about that badge. And that was when he told me that I want the scum to think we're law enforcement.
And the scum would have been a person like Mr. Payne or others that were allegedly running puppy mills or violations or whatever. Is that correct?
Well, from his tone, I would assume it to be anybody who's, you know, violating animal laws.
Mm-hmm.
For their health and well-being. Anybody that they perceive or he perceives when he's going in to do a bust.
Mm-hmm. And it really wasn't a bust, as you described. It's going to facilitate real law enforcement people to house safely the animals, because the animals are, even though it's a, supposedly an investigation and criminal activities in question, you want to contain the animals and make sure that they get proper care and get placed in proper homes or what have you, correct?
That is correct, and there's many points of a deployment going in for something like that. You have trained people who go in and handle the animals. You have trained people who are collecting forensic evidence. You have trained shelter staff who are going to take care of these animals when they're placed into a temporary shelter. And then you have trained transport specialists.
Mm-hmm.
So there are many, many avenues that go on in this operation.
Mm-hmm. Now, what you guys have shared with me, you've brought to my attention that a large portion, or maybe all, and correct me if I'm wrong if I go too far in describing this, that the response team, the emergency response team that you two were working with, pretty much have either resigned, or can you tell us what the status is of that? And you had indicated a great many of them have left the organization, and why. And you sent me some documents and emails that explains it, but could you share with the listeners what is the status, and did they all leave?
I'd have to sit down and look at the numbers. I think there were a total of 14 full-time employees, and of those, there were 12 field people, if you will,
mm-hmm.
were employees. They, in the past year, have all resigned. There are only two people of the original team that are left, and both of those are office personnel. All the field responders, the deputy director, the field supervisor, everybody, pretty much every employee or consultant has resigned within approximately the past year, 14 months thereabouts.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of them have resigned in the past 8 months. Pretty much it's been a free flow of resignations.
Mm-hmm.
Shortly after Mr. Haisley took.
Now, in some of those instances, I've spoken to others that were on that team, and they indicated that primarily the reason that they left was that Mr. Haisley's behavior and the unwillingness when they file a complaint or raise it to the higher levels, it would go unnoticed or no response. Is that, would you say that's the same thing that happened to the two of you?
That's our opinion.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and not to harp on something, but to get back a little bit, again, when you're doing the work that we do, whether it's a puppy mill or whether it's a disaster or a flood or hurricane, you do need some sort of identification and credentialing.
Mm-hmm.
FEMA has, on a federal level, they have identified the need for that, and they came up with something. The other thing that Ronnie was referring to is a Q card,
mm-hmm.
which was short for qualification card.
Right.
You are doing a disaster response, and a disaster is basically defined as anything that overwhelms a local resource. So a puppy mill in a small county could be defined as a disaster to that county. So for a proper ID, really what you need are these what's called Q cards, qualification cards. They give a photo ID of a person, their name, and basically gives their background training. When you look at the IC structure, incident command structure, was set up through the fire service, and it was designed because of such mass confusion years ago. If they had a fire, they said, well, we need a fire company. They didn't necessarily know what they got when they got that fire company. They might have a company that had a pumper and a pickup truck, mm-hmm. and they really need the hook and ladder and other vehicles. So they defined it as a Type 1, Type 2, 3 resource team. That's what FEMA was trying to do post-Katrina, was identify the type teams, and that was the reason for the cue cards. The cue cards for responders would serve as perfect identification. It lets you know who we are. It shows you the qualifications that those particular people have and shows that they are qualified to be on scene without the appearance of being a sworn official. It gives a level of professionalism, but it's not a deceptive level. Mm-hmm. It's a truthful level, if you will.
And generally, at these sites, having a law enforcement background, once it's contained, then you go in, and pretty much the level of threat is diminished substantially. So you're really just there gathering up the animals because they've secured the site, correct? And the perpetrators or the people that are allegedly violating the law are contained. They might, one of them or two of them may be on the site, but other than that, really no real threat, is there?
The ones I've been on have not been afterwards, no, because law enforcement has generally gone in and cleared any of that threat.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
From my understanding, you know, that the ones that go in should be the law enforcement and the local people. If law enforcement felt that there was a threat to animals on the scene, it's up to the local law enforcement personnel, the local animal control officers, and the local trained personnel to go in. Now, if they feel that they do not have somebody qualified, they could ask somebody from an outside agency to go in and assist.
I see.
By the same token, if they do that, make sure that that particular person has the training that's required to be able to assist, to know how to collect the evidence, know how this is what's involved in serving the warrants.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, if you hired me to come to the radio show and run all your equipment, you'd want to make sure I knew what I was doing, not that I just said I knew what I was doing, correct?
Right, and then Francis here would be mad. The unemployment rate is already high. I agree with, I know what you're saying,
Carol, one of the photographs that I sent you was of that card that Alan was talking about.
Yes.
And it has my photograph on it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I carry one of those that's very similar to that for my local county emergency operations center. And they check my qualifications every year. Something that's not on the Humane Society cue card, on the back of my local one, it actually will list my trainings,
mm-hmm.
all of my incident command systems trainings that I have, and they're quite extensive, but they're all listed on the back. And on the Humane Society United States card, there is nothing. There's just a picture of me and my name and a title of rescue technician.
Wow. And that's
when we go into a deployment, whether it's a tornado, a chemical spill, or a dogfighting case, we're supposed to be able to demonstrate to that, whoever the local commander is, that we know how to follow the system.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And that's exactly why they have the incident command trainings. Now, at the time when I left, which was last January, and that's all I can speak about, Mr. Haisley had openly admitted to me that at that time he had absolutely no ICS trainings and no DART trainings.
Mm-hmm.
And the DART stands for Disaster Animal Response Team.
Right.
That's a minimum level of training that is required by the Humane Society of the United States to be a volunteer for them.
And yet he's heading at the helm and you're claiming no training, as he's
Correct.
Indicated to you.
And he indicated that to me right in his office, that he had planned on getting the training but just hadn't had the time to do it yet because he was so busy doing deployments.
Right. Now, jumping tracks here for a bit, I want to share with the public that we're not nitpicking. And the two of you have shared with me substantial information. And I want to go right quick to a situation, and we'll come back to Texas and South Dakota and incidences that have occurred there. But at the President Obama's inauguration, there was an incident involving an Appaloosa horse, and that horse's name is Mouse. And in that, there was an incident where the horse actually backed into a parked truck where he got his leg lodged in by a winch and some scratches and some injuries, and he was sedated and calmed down. But the Humane Society of the United States went and put a video out claiming, here's what Scotland Hazley said. Quote, when the HSUS first came up on the scene, things were looking dire for Mouse. I did not think he would survive. 12 men and women labored for nearly 2 hours to untangle Mouse's leg so that he could be transported for the further treatment, end quote. Now, this was in a story in the Los Angeles Times, correct? And
yes.
And then in turn, the owner, and we've posted a link to these stories. The owner basically wrote back and said, a couple people, Mouse only requires 6 stitches and is recovering uneventfully. I have seen photos of the stitch cut as well as a video only a couple of days later showing Mouse prancing energetically in his paddock. His Borium horseshoes are currently in auction. And they're saying here, I'm a member of the... She said that she wished they would... He was not hit by a truck. He's backed into a parked car. So Hazley claimed he was hit by a car. And this basically was retraction. Is that right?
I think the L.A. Times 2 days later printed a retraction based on what Mouse's owner told him.
Mm-hmm.
There was a local, an organization out of Maryland, Days End Horse Rescue, who was actually on scene. They were on scene for the 2008 inauguration. They were also on scene at the 2004 inauguration,
mm-hmm.
the standby ambulance, because there are a lot of horses in the inaugural parade. So they were on scene for both of them. In 2004, there were no incidents, but in 2008, there was this one incident. And actually, a young lady, Brooke Rainey with Days End, was the one that orchestrated the getting the horse out of the winch, and they put the horse on Days End Farm Horse Rescue's trailer and transported it to Prince George's Equestrian Center for further treatment. But Brooke and a couple of volunteers from Days End and horse people that were there, that were with the, I think it was the Southern Lady Side Saddle Club, were the ones that orchestrated getting Mouse from out of the front bumper of this truck.
Mm-hmm.
And we're the ones, the actual rescue and transport.
But that's not what the HSUS was claiming. She said that the owner of the horse said, I would really appreciate it if HSUS would stop playing the video on their site. It is very overstated, and considering that they had nothing to do with aiding to the rescue of my horse, I am finding it quite offensive. Now, that brings me back. Now, we talk about the videos, and you guys share. Now, there must be some money or a great benefit to doing this. And Mr. Pacelli, as we've quoted Ronnie as having said, he liked the cowboy ways. And does these videos, do they really, my suspicion is they bring in money, but what do you think? Do they really, is it the purpose of getting these videos out there and tickling the people's sensitive spots to get money? Is that, am I off base?
No, in my opinion, that's exactly why it's done. They Scotland Hazley has a video crew with him almost all of the time, and they're playing to people's sensitivities when it comes to animals. And ultimately, and again, this is in my opinion, I don't have any statistics, but there are a tremendous amount of people who think that they're donating to help their local shelters by writing HSUS a check because they saw this video, and very, very little of it actually goes to any true shelters.
Now, there was one instance where you described that you were at some site, and he, instead of putting the people who were trained to go out in the water to get the animals in a he actually used the boats to put himself in one and the film crew in the other while leaving the rescue teams on shore. Can you guys share more details on that, to your knowledge?
That was in Hurricane Ike.
Okay.
And I was there taking care of the equipment, and I was there when the rescue crews came back to the shelter, and that they were so upset about it that I physically was not at the launching site with the boats, but the trained swift water rescue people were coming in, and they were furious. They had been just left standing on shore while Scotland Hazley and the film crew got in the boats and went out to do a rescue.
So this is not just a film crew, so the public and the listeners out there can understand this clearly. There's a film crew, and Scotland Hazley is the, I guess, the spokesperson or the man of the hour. And then they have an editing team so that they can immediately go back to the hotel or to their office and edit it and put it on with some music and whatever. Am I right?
Yes.
So
exactly.
And I think this is what we experience out here. Now, I've been following and looking on Scotland Hazley's Facebook, and on there, there's many pictures where he is posing with this badge. And then I also see Rowdy Shaw on his Facebook with pictures of the badge. And I noticed that in even on the Appaloosa Horse during the inauguration. Now here's a man. Now imagine let's think back. This is somewhat off subject, but imagine this is the President of the United States being inaugurated. We have the all of the U.S. Marshals and everybody on high alert to protect the streets and all. And here's a guy that is able to walk the streets with a gold badge hanging around his neck. If you go on the website, you can see this. And so that brings in the Secret Service. I mean, I would think they would be appalled that here's a man walking around presenting himself at a time like this with a badge. And if you go to the Humane Society's U.S. website and just type in on the video, Mouse the Horse or Presidential Inauguration, the video will come up. And I also noticed that here he is. Obviously, these people being screened and the Secret Service and everyone is concerned. And he is walking around pretending to be an enforcement officer. That raises some great alarms for me.
An intimidation factor.
Well, yeah, apparently, he tricked the Secret Service into thinking he could breach the barriers and come down with with this badge. Apparently, he could go anywhere, huh?
Well, they do have security past the perimeter, so, but, you know, once you're in there, you can put your badge, your credentials, whatever on. You've already been cleared.
Right.
To be, you know, in the scene. So...
Yeah, I'm just thinking about the horrible things that and how this little innocent act supposedly can grow or morph into something even worse. And when we talk about the civil rights of the constitutionality of this, the issues where this person walks in, videotapes, surreptitiously record people in their own homes and then run back and give an affidavit to the Hawaiian Humane Society or other government agencies violating or circumventing the Constitution. That is really frightening, and that's what we saw out here. And that is why I personally have a great interest in this, because we can't afford our rights, especially in our privacy, to be weathered down by some behavior like this. Now, I got a picture so that the public would know. I have a picture that I took off of Scotland Hazley's Facebook. And he and Wayne Purcell is walking down a path or a gravel road with a dog. And Scotland has his badge prominently displayed on his chest, and Wayne is walking with him. Wayne, and this is obviously, you guys have already written Wayne to tell him that you felt that it was illegal and wrong and improper to use these badges, and he ignored it. And here, he can't claim that he didn't know. So. But anyway, tell me about Texas. There were some incidences that have occurred, and we'll just go through briefly, to the best of your knowledge. Can you share with the listeners out there, if I'll just rattle off the state, what happened in Texas? With I'm told that he was basically almost uninvited, or there were some concerns that the officials there were concerned with their behavior.
Al, you were there at that time, so can you explain that one?
That I'd heard he was asked to leave, but again, the Texas, I guess sergeants will know about that. There was supposedly, and again, hearsay, with a letter of reprimand. I know that HSUS was a member of an organization called NARSC, the National Association of Rescue and Sheltering Coalition, and had resigned HSUS from NARSC shortly after that incident. Again, I guess the Texas SART people or the TVMA, Texas Veterinary Medical Association, might know more about that.
Well, I'm actually going to write a letter to them and as well, and I'm sure Inga Gibson here in Honolulu is listening in intently, and I've invited her for an interview a while back, and she referred me to Scotland Hazley. So, Ingrid, I know you're listening. Again, the invitation still stands, and I will also extend right now Mr. Purcell an opportunity to come on and rebut or offer insight or explanation. So, but go ahead, Alan.
It was just, I mean, this was in Hurricane Ike, and we didn't know anything was going on. We worked the whole, did a lot of rescues and worked on a Bolivar Peninsula and left, I think, September 28th, and we were unaware of any incidents. We didn't hear about anything until later. We knew that Scotland had left, and we didn't know why, but we were told later, apparently there were some incidents, and he was asked to leave. That was our understanding.
Well, we'll ask, I mean, because we don't speak as there being facts, but a lot of these things that you've shared with me in the emails, these were emails straight to the HSUS management. Have anyone up in the upper levels responded, or has even Mr. Purcell responded to any of your emails that you've sent him laying out these issues?
No. I've not heard anything.
Very little response. I got a response from Andrew Rowan, who at the time was Scotland Hazley's direct supervisor. And he was going to be looking into these matters. And I also, when I resigned at a deployment in Mississippi, I informed Mr. Hazley first, and then I had an hour-long meeting with Mr. Purcell, and I informed him that I had resigned. And I got an email response to that thanking me for my service and that he was going to stick with Mr. Hazley and his leadership of the team.
Now, in Mississippi, anything goes in Mississippi. I can say that I was born there, raised there. But one of the things, I make light of it, it's painful when I think about it, but I'm told there was a gentleman who spoke Spanish or was was involved in puppy mulling, and there was an incident, and I'm trying to track it down. So if you folk hear anything in details or factual about it, but something, there was an interpreter who interpreted, and this, the impression that was given to this homeowner, the person that was being investigated, was that the people from HSUS were wanted him to believe that they were immigrations or something. I don't know. Have you heard anything about that, or know any details, or who I can talk to specifically?
Only by slight rumors. Mm-hmm. Nothing that I have seen in writing confirming mm-hmm. that.
Well, they won't put that in writing, but if you know any names or
there are some of the. Some of the people that unfortunately that are in the know of these things are still employed at HSUS, and you know, as demonstrated while we were there, there's only loyalty to Mr. Haisley. There is no loyalty to anyone else.
Mm-hmm. Now, in Tennessee, what happened in Tennessee? Do you have any details on, I'm told, again, you know, I don't want to be innuendo and rumor and slander, but I'm hunting and pecking for someone to shed more light on the Tennessee matter. The decision was made to have the Tennessee puppy mill animals back in Gaithersburg. Can you explain what was happening on that incident?
To get the animals back?
Yeah, there was, it was sent to Scotland. This is an email Meredith sent to Scotland. The decision was made to, there was an issue where they seized animals or took possession of animals, and they want them to go back to Gaithersburg by 11 a.m. that Monday.
Oh, yeah.
I was involved in that. And basically it was the 750 animals that had been seized, and there were, I believe, approximately 90 animals that were going from Tennessee back to Maryland that were going to go to the Washington Animal Rescue League.
Mm-hmm.
And basically there was a crew of us that had vehicles. There were three vehicles, five personnel that basically worked all day getting all the animals ready to be transported so they could be loaded, you know, start loading them at 7 at night, be finished loading around 9 and get on the road and drive through the night so we could be there the next day.
From Tennessee to Maryland, you've already worked all day.
Mm-hmm.
And these are big rigs, some of them, right, that you're driving?
Yeah. The transport vehicle is basically almost like a tractor trailer. It's 77 feet, I think, overall length.
Mm-hmm.
But they had to have, you know, we were told that the other adoption centers would be there. So, you know, fortunately, I was involved in that. I took a break and I rested for a bit. But, you know, pushing through the night was, in our opinion, and we voiced our opinion, that it wasn't the safest way of doing things. You know, again, we tend to be overachievers, and we do our best to get the job done.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you mentioned earlier about everything. Those of us, the original team there, you look at salaries, and our salaries are not very large.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we can make a living, we can get by, but none of us did it for the money. We all did it for the animals. We
mm-hmm.
did it for a cause we believe in.
Mm-hmm.
We did it for love of animals. You know, it'd be, you know, it was just something that we really cared about.
Mm-hmm.
And we pushed hard to get things done.
Mm-hmm.
When we, you know, and unbeknownst to us, we were told that the reason that, you know, they wanted these animals there was because the rescue groups would be there to get them. Well, the one of the vehicles, it's a great big motorhome, had a blowout on the way back, so it wasn't able. It had to go on the side of the road and wait. Meredith and I were in the big rig with all the animals, and then our director at the time was in a pickup truck, and we made it into Gaithersburg. As soon as we pulled into headquarters there were TV cameras and all these film crews and all mm-hmm. stuff. Basically, we were given a time limit because there was so much press there.
Wow. So it's about the TV cameras and... Now, we're down the time on the, we got about 3.5 minutes. Real quickly, if you could finish up that point, and then Alan and Ronnie, real quickly, we got about 4 minutes. What else can you share with us?
Well, the one thing that I wanted to make clear, Mr. Bissell has been told many, many times, and almost every member of the team that has left in the past has related to me that they sent in a resignation letter, and not just to Mr. Bissell, but to, you know, some of the board of directors and to other supervisors. And they have, and they have a person employed there, Mr. Haisley, who's going to get somebody hurt. He's going to get somebody killed, such as having him drive the miles after working all day. That's just a very small thing of what's transpiring there.
And exposing the public to these dangers as well, a sleepy driver, a tired driver, rushing and running.
Exactly. There have been members who openly admitted they should not even be driving a pickup truck and small trailer.
Mm-hmm.
And they've been asked to get into a 38-foot motorhome and drive it, and they have had no experience doing so.
Okay. Ronnie, real quick, we're going to, and I'll invite you back. We've got to do another one.
Okay.
Real quick.
The thing that I'd like to end saying is if people were able to investigate and find the former team members and look at the credentials that each and every one of them have versus the credentials of the current team, I think that would speak volumes.
Okay. Well, I can say to the listeners out there, there's a lot more to this, and I do have more documentation, and I will be doing another show. And you can pick some of this up on carolcox.com, CARROLLCOX.com. I want to thank Ronnie Graves and Alan Schwartz, former contractors, volunteers, what have you, with the Humane Society of the United States. Gentlemen, thank you so much.
Thank you for what you're doing.
All righty. And that's about it. And what's alarming here, folks, is that the Payne family, and many of you are out there, are prime candidates right now as I speak. The Humane Society of Hawaii, the Hawaii Humane Society, can invite these people in. And I think that I can clearly demonstrate, and I will be conveying all of this to Mr. Payne's attorney, and raising these issues, and there are other things about the Humane Society of the U.S. Possession of animals, hippopotamus and all in the facilities, and the AAZP issues and all. But we'll talk about those later. Thank you for joining, and I'll talk to you next week. Aloha.
Baby, you understand me now. If sometimes you see that I'm mad, don't you know no one alive can always be an angel? When everything goes wrong, you see some bad. But I'm just a soul whose intentions are good. Oh, Lord, please don't let me be misunderstood.
On the AM dial.